Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of On My Mind. I'm Shelley Griffith, and today we're going to spend a little time talking about dermatology, skin conditions. Most of the time, as many of these skin conditions can be very self-limiting, such as rash, itching, poison ivy that you've seen, things like that. But let's talk about a few of these things that may affect us longer over our lifetimes. One of the most common problems that you're aware of is acne, and up to 50 million Americans have acne at one time or another, and almost 90% of these are between the ages of 12 and 14. However, as any of us as we age know, you can continue to have this throughout life. And the various treatments that are used these days will be lotions, and dermabrasion now has taken a leading role sometimes in this. Accutane has been around. Oral medications like tetracycline help. But the dermatologist will see so many folks with acne and become so commonplace. But millions and millions of dollars are spent every year on treatments for this. Cystic acne is usually a deeper under the skin type, the subdermal area, if you will, and these can cause cystic changes and scarring, which may have to be dealt with plastic surgery, laser type treatments later on. Another common problem that we see is atopic or atopic, A-T-O-P-I-C, dermatitis, which is mainly going to be some sort of allergic reaction to certain things. This can be in the food category. This can be in medications. We also, of course, see this when we're exposed to things, as I mentioned, poison ivy and other type plants outdoors. This creates a severe set of itching in at least 90% of the patients, along with a red, rough, almost crusty rash if there's weeping from the skin itself. Many children will have this. As a matter of fact, it's probably more common in childhood than in adulthood. Another common problem that we see is alopecia or hair loss. Supposedly, 80 million Americans suffer from some degree of hair loss, which is considered to be hereditary and much greater, as I'm sure, in men. Many of the events that actually create this alopecia are improper use of styling products, primarily gels and creams that are placed on the hair, which destroy the hair root. Pulling on the hair, this is not an unusual thing in childhood. However, I will see in many adults, especially women, that they will twirl and curl their hair with their fingers while they're talking. Whether it's a nervous sensation or not, it doesn't seem to matter. But by doing this pulling, the root of the hair is destroyed. And an excessive amount of this, and I've seen this in various people, fancy term, trichotillomania, T-R-I-C-H-O-T-I-L-O-M-A-N-I-A, meaning actually grabbing a hold of handfuls of hair to pull them out. Once the anxiety is reduced, hopefully this problem goes away. We also, of course, see hair loss in thyroid disease, especially in women, and in women as they reach the menopausal years past the age of 50. So it's very important that you ladies who are listening have your thyroid levels checked as you get into that time of your life. Various autoimmune diseases will cause this. One of the most common that I'm sure you listeners have heard of is lupus. This is extremely common that we see this. Childbirth can lead to changes in the hormonal levels in women and lead to hair loss. Major surgery with the stressors there can lead to it. High fever and then just plain everyday anxiety and stress can lead to hair loss. Seems to be a lot of this is due to decreased protein or iron in the diet, and these changes might indeed help. Certainly you've heard of various vitamins helping, especially vitamin A, B, but I'm not sure sometimes if that is truly a reason for significant hair loss. People do think that dietary changes in the form of severe anorexia or bulimia, so that's something that has to be considered. Birth control pills, even regular hormones instead of helping, can harm and cause more hair loss. Blood thinners will do this. Any of the common blood thinners that we see these days, warfarin, Coumadin, Eliquis, Xarelto, these are all commonly prescribed blood thinners and can lead to hair loss. And then, of course, as we're all aware, cancer and cancer therapy, chemotherapy especially, will lead to significant hair loss. Another major dermatologic condition that we hear about, we see it on TV all the time, psoriasis. P-S-O-R-I-A-S-I-S, psoriasis. These are generally thick, crusty plaques that are on prominent joints in the body, elbows, knees especially. Just literally millions and millions of dollars spent annually in this country to try to correct it. Some of the newer treatments I looked up recently amazed me at the cost, and I don't know how or whether insurance companies cover the cost of these medications. Cosentyx, C-O-S-E-N-T-Y-X, you've seen that advertised. That is approximately $6,900 for an average yearly cost. A new one out is known as Bimzelx, B-I-M-Z-E-L-X. Never heard of it until I started researching for this show. $14,300 average retail is $32,000, $7,200 for a syringe given every 16 weeks as a shot. VTAMA, Vitama cream, couldn't locate a price on that searching, but apparently this helps to rub on the areas and seems to do quite well for psoriasis. Very common problem, very annoying, difficult to clear up, but when it is cleared, patients feel obviously so much better. Two other common things due to the pores and the glands in the skin, secreting oils. You've heard of them, maybe suffered from them. Rosacea, R-O-S-A-C-E-A, seborrhea, S-E-B-O-R-R-H-E-A. Over 16 million people are said to suffer from these each year in this country. 30 to 60 years of age is much more common, and it's seen with those who have a fairer skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, but also can be prevalent in folks who actually tan too much, tanning beds, or regular sunshine outside. Needs to help with cleaning the skin with non-abrasive soaps, then applying cortisone-type cream usually will help. Certainly dietary fats, reduction of that could help as well. And then, of course, there are the cancers that we suffer in the skin, and perhaps the most common of these is basal, B-A-S-A-L, cell cancer. Some 3.6 million patients supposedly have this each year, and it's a 4-to-1 ratio to squamous, S-Q-U-A-M-O-U-S, cell cancer, which is much more serious. These are generally not life-threatening in any way. 95% are better curated at 5 years. You can use topical therapy for basal cell as a rule. Some people are using antibody therapy, injectables, and the squamous cells are usually removed surgically if they don't respond to these local type therapies. There's a thing known as hedgehog therapy, which I thought was very interesting. And apparently in our bodies, we have an antibody system, immune antibody system, that goes through a pathway that's been labeled by the specialist as a hedge pathway. And if we can interrupt that pathway, we can decrease our risks of squamous cell and basal cell cancers. Now, when you go to surgical removal of squamous cells or melanoma, which we'll talk about in a moment, the most common surgery these days, instead of just excising, taking out the lesion, is known as Mohs therapy, capital M-O-H-S, developed by Dr. Frederick Mohs, who lived from 1910 to 2000. And the removal is done in extremely thin layers, almost microscopically. When you remove a layer of the tumor, the surgeon looks at it under the microscope, determines whether or not there appears to be any other disease, and at the point at which they see no further disease, they stop the surgery. So it may be 1 millimeter thick, maybe a little deeper, but it's an interesting way to remove it instead of just saying, okay, I'll do one removal, see you back so many weeks later, and then do another. So this has become extremely popular in our country. Cure rates, supposedly with this type of surgery, for basal cell, right at 99%, and for squamous, 95%. Now let's look at the most significant, deadlier skin cancer that we're all aware of, and that's melanoma, M-E-L-A-N-O-M-A. Supposedly, each year, there will be 97,000 new cases that pop up in this country, and that may be the tip of an iceberg because of our tendency to want to be sunbathing and using tanning beds, which are no less significant in causing melanoma. Stage 1 through stage 4 is the way these are rated. In stage 4, tragically, this cancer can go to the brain, liver, and lungs. And basically, 5-year survival rates from melanoma after treatment, if it's localized, regional, that means it goes to some lymph nodes, 75%. Stage 4 is around 35%. And the diagnosis will be with a biopsy. And surgically, we can see these cells. And then as a part of the workup, one would look for possibly CT scans and maybe even MRI scans, depending on what symptoms are there. Chemotherapy is used for this. Radiation therapy does not seem to be very successful in melanoma. Interestingly, there are about 20 deaths a day in the United States, and the highest rates are in states I never would have picked for this, and it's listed as Utah, Delaware, Vermont, and New Hampshire. I never would have thought that. I would have looked certainly at California and Florida, other states maybe in the Southwest, high exposure to sun, but that is apparently not what the experts are saying. The things you look for, the so-called ABCDE of abnormal skin lesions, A is asymmetry, where you look for an irregular type edging to a lesion. Borders are uneven. They're not smooth and rounded. The color can be red, brown, black. The depth, which really is the width of the lesion that we see, up to 6 millimeters, which doesn't sound like much, but obviously for skin lesions, it can be significant. And then E represents the elevation of a lesion. These are generally above the skin and certainly have problems that need to be checked out. Sometimes there's confusion with what we call actinic keratoses. And a keratosis is a thickened, colored lesion that almost all of us develop after a certain age, let's say perhaps 55 or greater. And this also can be due to a lot of sun exposure in our youth. And these keratoses rarely become cancerous, but they also need to be checked and removed if there's any particular question by the dermatologist. The other things that the dermatologists see frequently, of course, as we said, allergies. White blanched areas in the skin known as vitiligo, V-I-T-I-L-I-G-O. Raynaud's disease, R-A-Y-N-A-U-D-S. Many of you may have this. Extreme pain at the extremities, mainly the hands, due to loss of circulation to the fingertips and the toes. This is something that is seen commonly in rheumatology disorders, lack of circulation into the connective tissue. For these common ailments, the dermatologist will prescribe cortisone creams, ointments, allergy shots after you test. Some people use a compound known as 5-fluorouracil, U-R-A-C-I-L, to treat skin cancers. If you see these lesions, they persist, you've got to get them checked with preferably the dermatologist. Certainly, family physicians and surgeons see a lot of this. I used to see quite a bit in my practice in gynecology and would refer them on at that juncture. Interestingly, I've talked to some dermatologists and now almost 50% of dermatology practices deal only with cosmetic dermatology. Those of you who have read about it, see ads about it, maybe have used some of this yourself. We'll see hair restoration surgery with implants. We see Botox treatments, of course. It's been around a long time. Dermabrasion, peeling, tattoo removals, scar removals. These may take a plastic surgeon to deal with those, as well as body contouring and sculpting is something new in the dermatology realm. Lasers can be used with this. They're using electromagnetic therapy, which I have no idea how that works, sorry. And then ultrasound therapy. Some of the dermatologists, along with general surgeons, will do liposuction, which has been around for many years. That could be considered another form of dermatology. Botox use is quite common, and this is done in many clinics as an outpatient with injectable units of Botox. Another newer thing I read about was mesotherapy, M-E-S-O therapy, which are considered to be injections into cellulite or cellulite, however you wish to pronounce it, C-E-L-U-L-I-T-E. These injections will help relieve patients of the sort of marked areas of cellulite, mainly in the lower extremities. A newer thing I read about, platelet growth factor, PRP, for hair loss, scars, stretch marks. That's an injectable treatment, I think, on the basis of once a month. And some people, if you do it around the head and neck area, are referring to this as a vampire facial. Interesting terminology. And then another form of therapy is called microneedling, ultra-fine needles, which actually make the skin infected underneath, and then the skin sort of sloughs off, as I understand it, has been used in the aging process and in acne, severe acne. I've not talked to anybody about that, so that's totally new to me as well. And then you have photodynamic and acid therapy, which involve many times cryotherapy or cold therapy of pigmented areas, warts, cysts, and spider veins. When you start looking at these various procedures and investigating them, going to your websites, please talk with a dermatologist to get the full information, side effects, as well as the potential for improving all of these things. And then, as I say, the plastic surgeons are going to be doing a good bit of this in a cosmetic sense as well as in a therapeutic sense. The overall costs, they have told me to see a dermatologist, can range from maybe, let's say, $100 to $275 for a general visit. Surgical procedures, of course, just like with plastic surgery, can reach thousands of dollars. And one must check and clear with the insurance companies as to whether these things are paid for. Many times they are not, especially when you label them cosmetic. Don't get caught, folks, with having a large bill for something that you thought insurance might indeed cover. And if you have any questions, always email me, shellgriff@gmail.com. I'll be glad to get back to you, checking with my dermatology colleagues. And then if you have any comments, please send them to that site as well. Now, until next time, I always enjoy looking up some quotes referencing our particular podcast. And one that I found was, aging is a fact of life. Looking your age is not. This is from a Dr. Howard Murad. Another one, I hate it when you offer someone a sincere complaint on their mistakes and suddenly she's not your friend anymore. That's from Anonymous. Another one, a woman is helpless only when her nail polish is drying. That's another Anonymous. And then again with the famous author Anonymous, all I want is world peace and a pedicure. Some of these are really funny. Folks, thanks for being with us today and listening. Hope, as I say to each and every one of you every time, that you have a safe and healthy day, and I'll see you a little further up the road.